There's a lot I have to say regarding giftedness and the things in my life that are directly or indirectly related to which, in my view, is everything.
Hello, and welcome to the International Gifted Consortium. I'm Vanessa Wood. We hear real-life stories daily from our communities, from our schools, and from our families across the globe, both heartwarming and heart-wrenching. In order to truly understand our highly and profoundly gifted population, we have to go beyond our own experiences to the depths of another's reality. In each episode, we'll give you a glimpse into the life. So sit back, embrace the space, and take in the view. From the eyes of the highly profoundly gifted, this is Room with a View.
The way the grades were based on doing the homework, grades are based on regurgitating facts. And that's not really how you work.
I feel like a lot of it's busy work that then I don't do. Like, because I just won't do busy work.
Like, I remember in grade school when the teachers would say, Janan didn't turn in her homework, and I would get in your backpack, and it was all there, and it was all done. You just didn't turn it in.
Welcome. It's an honor to be part of this conversation. Today, I'm speaking with Valerie and Janan. Valerie and I met at the Arizona State House advocating for funding for gifted education. Since then, Valerie's become involved with the IGC and has served as an IGC stakeholder panelist and speaker. And her daughter, Janan, is now a student at ASU. Today, we are graced with the sharing of their experiences as we dive into conversation about the phenomena of giftedness. So let's continue. Janan, when I hear you speak, I hear a strong need for meaningful interactions. I hear a need for substance. A reason, a need for purpose. I would love to frame our conversation with an existential model. Existential models represent a way of thinking about human experiences based on the belief that human beings have the need for meaning and purpose in life, as well as the capacity for freedom and choice. Janan, does this philosophical concept resonate with you? Can you share an example of how you see yourself in this context?
Purpose thing.
What is it then?
I just want to do something I like. Like, I don't care if that, like, changes anything.
So why do you like conservation biology?
I like animals. Like, I don't want to go into research or anything. I don't want to do anything. I just want to hang out with animals.
I'm struggling with this one because I think I know you well enough that I think her question is incredibly relevant and valid for you, because having known you, knowing how passionate you are about animals, not just hanging out with them, but the conservation of them, how passionate you are about voting rights, women's rights, LGBTQ rights, everything that you've ever been passionate about in your life are things that most people view as much bigger than one person, right? Which is a much more existential kind of bigger picture, not just I want to make more money, or not just I want to work for X company, but I want to do something or be involved in something or become a part of something that serves a purpose. That,
well, like, conservation is important to me, but, like, that doesn't mean I've ever done anything, you know?
What do you mean you've never done anything?
I've never done anything. Like, involved in conservation.
But you want to, right?
I want to work with animals.
For conservation purposes, or just literally to get up every morning, go to the zoo, feed an animal, scoop up its shit, give it water, and go home?
I just don't think I think about it like that. Like, if I were to work in, like, a bat sanctuary, I would think about the bats in front of me.
So you think only about saving that one or two or whatever, 10 bats right in front of you?
Well, that's all I would be doing. I don't think that has a larger impact.
Really?
Mm-mm.
I would disagree wholeheartedly. I think that anytime you work in, like, let's say if you worked at Liberty Wildlife, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a small, relatively local rescue. But every animal that you could work with there, their goal is what? Getting it back out into nature. So that it can live as the wild creature that it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you worked at a bat sanctuary, that would also be the same goal, right? So even though you're looking at this one bat in front of you, your goal is to rehabilitate it enough so that it can fly away, eat on its own, procreate, and make more bats. Does that not have a larger impact with knowing what you know about bat populations and the risks that are there under right now?
I mean, yeah, when you say it that way.
Or you're saying you don't think about how that would impact the overall bat population, that for every bat you could potentially release healthy back into the bat population, that wouldn't have some bigger impact.
Well, like I said, like, when you say it like that, sure, but, like, that doesn't, like, immediately come to my mind, no. And, like, for the zoo, I would say, like, the only thing is awareness, you know?
Who's awareness? Like,
like, the kids who are coming to the zoo are then, like, learning to love these animals and protect them in the future.
Yeah.
And then, like, obviously, like, the funding, too, but, like, I don't consider that, like, serious.
I'm kind of sad because I think what you're doing again is almost negating the importance of what you are considering doing with your life, because it is huge. It would make a difference, but you don't think that.
No. I think if I went into, like, research or something, that would be different.
Why?
Because then you're, like, affecting change.
How are you not affecting change at the Phoenix Zoo when, like you say all the time, some little kid comes through the turnstile and says, "Where are the lions?" And you can show that child exactly where the lion is, and you can tell them that lion's name and how that lion came to the zoo and what that lion's purpose is. What if that kid goes to become a researcher?
I don't know. That's so, like, big. I don't like to think about things like that.
Why?
I just don't.
So that is what Vanessa's asking.
Exactly, but, like, I don't like big existential questions like that.
Existential questions are big, and we certainly don't expect you to have the answers. Thank you so much for sharing with us. Valerie, I'm wondering if you'd be willing to take us back to a time when you felt Janan enjoyed or explored this type of thought process. What initiated it? Can you give us some examples? What do you think changed?
I can think of a specific incident when Janan was about 6 or 7. She was in art class at school, and a little girl in that class whose family happened to be fundamentalist Christian told a boy whose family was Jewish that he and his whole family were, quote, going to hell because they didn't believe in Jesus Christ. Personally, we don't follow any kind of organized religion and had never attended any kind of services. And I had never taught her concepts like heaven, hell, or Jesus. I was unaware of the situation when I picked her up from school, but really quickly I knew something was wrong because she was quiet. I think any parent of a gifted child knows that in and of itself is very unusual, because normally when she got in the car, it was nonstop talking about everything that she had learned and had happened throughout the day. But she was quiet for quite a while, and then just out of the blue, seemingly, asked, "Mom, what's hell?" It seemed like an odd question, obviously, but having raised her for 6 or 7 years, I knew any new concept she overheard, learned about, was introduced to, led to this kind of extensive questioning. And so it didn't really throw me for a loop at first. I just simply explained, I understood it to be a Christian or religious concept. That's a place where bad people go when they die versus a place good people go that's called heaven. And then she asked who Jesus Christ was. So I did my best to try to explain that. Immediately, though, she became upset and started crying and said, "But Brianna said Corey and his family were going to hell because they don't believe in Jesus. I like Corey. He's nice. His mom is nice. Do we believe in Jesus? Are we going to hell? Why would nice people go to hell just because they don't believe in something? What if they don't know about it? How is that fair?" Her anguish was instantly so deep, I regretted answering her questions, because I was driving and I couldn't hug her. I couldn't really do anything other than just say, "Hold on until we get home." And once we did get home, we ended up having to spend that entire night and many, many more to come diving into the intricacies of world religions. Thankfully, I had friends of all religious faiths whose children attended her school, many whose kids were even involved in this incident. So she started attending different services with her friends. She went to a Jewish temple with one. She went to a Buddhist temple with another. She attended a Christian church that had a predominantly Black congregation. There, they celebrated with the most amazing, uplifting music, and that was by far her favorite. I just remember she came home telling me that she got to play tambourine at church, and she thought that was incredible. I think, as is common with gifted children, she ended up, because of this one incident, having to deep dive into nearly every world religion. And while she was doing that, she began to point out very astute things like, these all seem to have love in common. So why would Brianna say something that mean to Corey? It wasn't very loving. Her sense of judgment led to quite a few impassioned speeches in our living room about all of these injustices and how wrong they were and how people should just love people for who they are. Looking back, I feel like a neurotypical child would have been pacified with some type of reassurance from an adult that not everyone believes what had been stated in that art class and that Corey and his family were good people. But because of Janan's giftedness, it took months and months and learning about things that most 6 and 7 year olds don't have to learn about for her to even be able to come out of the existential angst that that one statement caused. There were not quite this deep, but many other instances like that as she was growing up. I think the time I really noticed her pulling away from this type of thinking was after we relocated to Arizona. So she was in the fourth grade. We were looking for schools, and Janan had always attended schools specifically for gifted children. So she fit in and the other children thought like her and sought knowledge the way that she did. But when we moved to Arizona, we just couldn't find the right school. And so she began attending schools with a lot more neurotypical children. And at first, she didn't seem to notice her differences specifically. But as she got to, I would say, 7th or 8th grade, she really did. That was when I remember one time she came home and said, Mom, I don't understand all the drama at school. And it turned out it was a conversation she had overheard between some girls. And then she started coming home talking about the fact that everyone she knew at school liked Justin Bieber, and she wasn't into Justin Bieber. She was very much into things like musical theater, and she loved this boogie-woogie jazz pianist. And so at first it was just an awareness. She would come home and say, everybody likes Justin Bieber and I don't. But one day she came home and said, I want to buy a Justin Bieber CD. And I said, okay. And she said, I just feel like I need to understand what these kids like. And so I said, okay. And then it was very quickly after that, that everything that she had ever kind of loved about learning seemed to begin to go out. And her conversations began to become centered around this need to, quote unquote, be normal. And in instances where something would come up that I would think she would be interested in, she would say things like, I'm not interested in those things anymore. I don't talk about those things anymore. I'm normal now. And that is also when I noticed her anxiety and her depression begin to kick in. I feel like she still struggles with that. She's such a social person, and she loves interacting with other people. But it's so hard to find others that think on her level that she spends much of her time just trying to fit in. It's heartbreaking.
Thank you, Valerie and Jaden. We are so grateful to you both. You both have provided us insights into this very real struggle and intersection between one's own sense of belonging, innate development, and sense of self. Lewis Terman, Lita Hollingworth, and Mirica Gross all identified and documented these struggles in their studies of the social, emotional, physical, cognitive, and altruistic development of highly, profoundly gifted individuals. And Dabrowski's study of gifted adolescents added intellectual, imaginational, emotional, psychomotor, and sensual overexcitabilities to his human development theory. Dabrowski's theory of positive disintegration recognizes this greater than typical struggle that we are speaking about. Existential questions are big. They can be overwhelming, and we don't have all the answers. That's exactly why they are big questions. Exploring and contemplating big questions with the support of like-minded peers, like-minded mentors, and like-minded practitioners provides the support and safety one needs to explore their own vulnerabilities. This angst with proper support is what drives us to keep searching, trying, contemplating, developing, and growing towards a greater awareness of the self. Valerie, you describe the human need for commonality and a sense of belonging. We know from Maslow's hierarchy of needs that a sense of belonging is needed throughout an individual's development. Sometimes this angst is too big for the individual, depending on their developmental potential and current stage of development. Angst, often represented as an extreme care for something, can turn to indifference until the individual's development motivates new insight, inspiration, or potentially a new path for further positive growth and development. So, what do we do as caring parents and teachers? I would like to read an excerpt from an upcoming book. Parents and teachers, as well as other vital stakeholders, school administrators, counselors, psychologists, and pediatricians, must provide fitting experiences with like-minded peers, mentors, and practitioners. Like-minded peers, like-minded mentors, and like-minded practitioners are essential to the well-being and development of highly, profoundly gifted individuals. Maslow's hierarchy of needs reminds us that one of our most basic needs as human beings is to feel an authentic sense of belonging. In order to feel this sense of belonging, validation, and purpose, we need the reciprocal exchange of perceptions, thoughts, experiences, and feelings. Els D. Wick captured this most important concept in her analogy of the sleeping lion. Highly profoundly gifted children and adolescents need opportunities to see themselves in others. This mirror effect provides opportunities for positive self-reflection and development. Without peers and mentors with whom you can connect, we have no mirror. Lastly, I would like to challenge all of you to connect the highly, profoundly gifted individual you have in mind with one like-minded peer, and as a bonus, one like-minded mentor. Now, this is no easy task, but I have a feeling each of you are up for it. You will make a difference in this individual's life. Thank you to our listeners from over 40 countries and growing. Room with a View is produced by the International Gifted Consortium Education Outreach Initiative for you and by you. Join us on social media, giftedconsortium.org, or connect with me on LinkedIn. Until next time, enjoy the view.